Alrighty then. Whoa, that's a little hot. Boom, boom. Hi, welcome, welcome, welcome. All right, we have the after lunch kind of blues, but I'm going to say hello, everybody, and you're going to say hello, Jeremy. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Jeremy.
Actually, that was pretty darn good. That's pretty impressive. Excellent. Thank you guys so much for being here. As they say, I know you have a choice when picking sessions, and I thank you for choosing to fly Jeremy Air. So with that in mind, we're going to have a real good time today. I do have some housekeeping duties to sort of kick us off. I had a lot of people while I was kind of out chatting with some folks. They said, hey, aren't you giving away a book or something, a meet and greet or something? And the answer is yes. Who here already has my big, fat, 800-page group policy book with the green cover, and you love it? And who would have wished of those people that you could have gotten it for free, but instead, uh-oh, you paid for it? Yep. You stole it. Get out. So I'm doing a book signing tomorrow with my friends at Viewfinity, which is booth, you want to write this down, it's booth 2241. You'll get a free book if you are the first X number of people in line and all that stuff at 2:55 p.m. So that is the first housekeeping duty. And let's see, I'm also doing two other speeches in case you care. I'm doing one on PowerShell with my buddy Jeff Hicks. The idea is we're going to do how to search and destroy all the group policy server-side problems you might have using PowerShell together. And that is session number WSV415. And then I'm doing another awesome fun session, which is called The Power of Group Policy. In a way, it's a sort of part one of that other session, part two, kind of, sort of. But if you don't make, obviously, if you're not here for this one, you wouldn't know. But that's, it's okay. You can make either or. And that's WCL 380. So that's all the housekeeping stuff. So let's go right into what we want to talk about today, which is total desktop lockdown. Now, I want to set the stage and be super careful that you don't think that I'm talking about every PC in your environment. That is not the goal here. Specifically, what we're going to talk about is those kind of pesky walk-up computers. Anybody here have like shop floor, cafeteria, specialty machines, kiosk machines? That is what we're talking about here today. So if you thought we were going to like conquer the beast of making sure that your users can do literally nothing on their machines, that's not what this talk is about. I was really specific in the write-up to make sure that you're in the right place. Again, we're here specifically to talk about those kind of walk-up computers. Now, will you be able to take aspects of what you learn here and translate them to your normal machines? Of course. Of course you'll be able to do that, and I want you to do that, but I just want to set the stage about precisely what we're here to accomplish. So with that in mind, the disclaimer is please don't go overboard, okay? Don't. You know, I wouldn't do all these things, if that makes any sense. That's probably a recipe for somewhat of a disaster. There's also no one way to skin the cat. What I'm going to show you is a handful of stuff that I like. Is there stuff that you like that I might not cover? Of course there is. This is just the stuff that I like, things that maybe you've seen before, maybe you haven't seen before, or if you have seen it before, I'll try to give you a new way to think about it, those kinds of things. Of course, we're not going to go over all possible solutions. There's lots of different ways to do that. And there's definitely no one silver bullet. All right, a lot of people think, oh, if I just buy this one tool, I will be locked down. I'll have all my desktop problems solved. It doesn't really work that way. There's no one push the magic button. Security is, of course, an incremental thing. When you learn something today, you implement it today. You learn something tomorrow, hey, you get that much more additional juice on it. So that's the idea there. All right? And today's talk, again, is about mostly group policy-based solutions. Can you buy third-party tools that will do all sorts of crazy stuff and not be group policy-based? Yes, absolutely. But this talk is mostly about group policy stuff. So are we in the right place? Yes or no? Thank you. Okay, very good. All right. So the first thing, actually, before I even go into that slide, let me show you something that not too many people have seen before. This is a standard machine. You've seen this kind of thing before. You might have something like this in your environment where you say, you know, it's a little sign on the desk that says, press the kiosk logo to log on to your kiosk session. And they do that. They log on to their kiosk. Oh, that's great. No, you didn't see that. If I was in the Men in Black movie, I would, pew, okay. But what I want to show you, even though it's got a deactivation problem, the point is that pretend a user went and they downloaded something maybe you didn't want them to have. So let's go ahead and go to this application. You might have heard of it. It's called Firefox. And this is a standard user. I promise I'm not running as some guy with elevated admin rights, or I'm not running as an admin user. And I'm just going to download and decide to install Firefox. And when I do that, I get that. And you think, oh, thank goodness I get the user account control. Because if a user was able to install Firefox, that would be very bad for my kiosk machine. Now, I went to ninja hacking school. And I learned a ninja technique to work around this. And it's the escape key. And there it is. Yep, I know, it's hard to believe. And it installs, you just click on it, go. And you might be wondering, what is going on? Now, what is actually going on? Anybody see what happened? What did the installer utility know how to do? It asked mommy first if it could install in program files. When mommy said no, daddy said yes. And it went to program data. So, it installs cheerfully. I swear, there's no trick up my sleeve. If you want to create a local user yourself tonight, as, you know, call them Johnny or whatever, I promise this will work exactly the way I'm describing it here. No questions asked. Whose mind is, wait, ninja hacking school. No problem. Whose mind is now officially blown? Okay. Right? No trick up my sleeve, I promise. There are a lot of applications that do it this way. Are there lots and lots of other applications that don't do it this way? Yes, absolutely. But this is the first thing that we wanted to talk about. All right? Now, gosh, if only there was a magic technique that I could use so that when I rebooted this machine, when I restart this machine, that all of that wacky user changes stuff just kind of magically melted away. We're gonna come back to that. But I want you to see that this machine, his name, just to prove a point here, if I go to a command prompt here, whoops. And I type host name. This machine is called Wioski 7. We'll talk about what that means a little later. And I'm just going to prove a point that I'm going to restart this machine, and we'll come back to it a little later. And after we come back to it, we will see at the end of the slide deck that all of those changes that user made are now officially gone. We'll talk about how that magic occurs. Okay? So that is point number one. All right? So the next thing on the docket is, here we go. Let's talk about shell games. So the idea is that, again, this is not something you'd probably want to do for every possible machine in your environment, but we talked about how you have those kinds of walk-up, shop floor, kiosk, lab machines, library machines, coffee station machines. Whenever I walk into somebody's world because they ask me to come in to do some consulting and I can't get on their wireless network, I appreciate when there's a wired station there for me to check my own email. I love that. That's really a nice introduction to the company that I can check my email there. And so one of the things you may want to do is to give those kinds of walk-up computers a standardized look and feel with a shell. Now, the idea is that, and this is something that we knew it back in the recesses of our brain, but let's bring it to the forefront, is that the thing we touch every day in Windows is this thing. It's a program that runs every time you run Windows, and it's called Explorer, and it's replaceable. Okay, you don't have to run Explorer, okay? I know some of you know this already, and that's okay. So the idea is that you can change the shell if you want, and I'm about to change it to Internet Explorer, for instance. But it turns out you can actually download some free and third-party replacement shells as well, depending on what you need to do. So by way of example here, I've got a couple just to show you here. This monitor died right before I came here, so I can't exactly see what these are called. So my friend in the front row, yes, you, right there. Yes, you, use this guy. All right, he's not paying attention, so I'll run down there myself. That's okay. I was going to say, you can announce them for us. Okay, so this first one is called Emerge Desktop. That's pretty cool. That's pretty neat. Got a pretty tight configuration there. That one is called, this one is called BB Lean, I found as well. I thought that was pretty neat as well. And this guy here is called the Ashton Shell. Ooh, I think that one's actually, you can purchase and get some extra cool whiz bang stuff. So the point of the story is you can see it's obviously Windows, and you can see that it's got a lot of customization, things that sometimes Explorer can do and some things Explorer can't do. So depending on how you're trying to do your particular desktop lockdown, consider checking out these alternative shells. So what I want to do is I want to kind of give you an example of using something that's in the box. And I already mentioned it. I'm going to replace Explorer with, say, Internet Explorer. So let's go ahead and do that. So we'll go. I know you can't see what I'm doing. That's OK. We'll come back over here. All right. So here we are. We're just some guy in the machine. His name is East Sales User 3. That's just some guy over here. We'll go ahead and we'll log him off. And he was running good old Explorer. But now what we want to do is we want to upend his universe. But technically, we don't really want to upend that one guy's universe. Maybe we want to do it for a collection of folks. So I'll start off with my East Sales users, and I'll right-click over them, and I will replace Shell with IE. All right, I'll click Edit here. Now, this particular setting is on the user side, and it lives under User Side, Policies, Admin Templates, and it's under System, and it's called Custom User Interface. Now, by the way, you could, if you really, really wanted to, do things like this, c:\windows\system32\calc.exe. That works. Ah, what the heck. If you want to see it, let's go ahead and see it. Right? So look over my shoulder. I'm doing it right, right? Okay. So if I go over to this guy right here, let's just make sure I'm not pulling a fast one on you here. And if all goes perfectly, this guy has nothing but calc. Boom! And then he closes calc and he cries. So he hits Control-Delete and he gets that, which makes perfect sense. He also gets things like Task Manager, but you get the general idea. All right, so let's go ahead and replace, of course, calc is silly, totally silly. We'd never want to do that. As my buddy Mark Manassi likes to say, of course use these powers for good and not for evil, and I couldn't agree more. Anyway, so what we're going to do, we're going to change this over to this one. We're going to change now to, I'm going to put it in quotes because what I'm about to have will have a space in it. So this is c:\Internet Explorer\iExplorer.exe. All right, there we go. Look over my shoulder. Do I have it right? Somebody nod your head if you think I've got it right. Okay, thank you. You know, there's 200 of you and one of me, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, so. All right, let's go back over to this guy. Go ahead and log on here. And if we accomplish the goal, we've thus replaced calc with iExplorer. Ta-da! Excellent. So this is obviously something more useful, but that calc example actually isn't so far off. You might have something particular in mind for a shop floor machine or a kiosk machine, the library app. There's actually a lot of utility here. Of course, calc is the funniest one. But by way of example, this is a very useful idea here. Now, not every application has configurable items. Internet Explorer has like 1,000 or more configurable items. So I'm not going to kill you, I swear, with how to configure the crap out of Internet Explorer. That's not what we're here to do. I just kind of want to show you maybe one thing. Like maybe the one thing I'm going to show you is I will show you how to prevent this, which is just closing Internet Explorer, because that's a bad hair day for that poor guy. So we'll go ahead, we'll log off here. We'll go back to my GPO. And the one I'm after is under... let's see, I've got it here under Internet Explorer. Oops, I had a note here and then I lost it. All right. So it's under System. Windows Components, Internet Explorer, Browser Menus. Here we go. Disable closing the browser and Explorer windows. That's the guy. So just to prove a point, let's just make sure it actually, in fact, works. All right, he runs, we close him, hey, it's been canceled. No. Now the point again is that this particular application was coded from the ground up to be what's called policy aware. There are policies in the box, you deliver a policy setting, the application kicks into high gear and performs your wish, and it does it perfectly the way you expect. Again, not every application has this ability, and we'll talk about that idea of you want to deliver settings to applications that can't normally be managed. We'll talk about that at the end of the talk. So that's it for this, but you know, I think we really have a bigger problem at hand. And the bigger problem is, well, not only that we can't close it anymore, is that I linked this over to my East Sales user dudes. That's kind of not really what I wanted, because this says basically anywhere Johnny goes, Johnny gets this experience. See the problem with that? It's not normally about the guy. It's about this computer, the computer you're at, this computer that people come in and out of all the time. So what we're going to try to do is we're going to teach the computer to eat user-side settings. You see the problem so far? Let's go ahead and reanalyze it from the ground up. Let's take it back a little slower. So we've got this policy setting called replace shell with IE. And if we look at the settings report here, we're going to see the two things that I did so far, which is custom user interface, and that's on the user side. And I've got Windows components, blah, 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 and that stuff's also on the Windows side. How will we teach our computer to eat Windows settings? Well, before we do that, let's go back real quick to the slide deck, because I want to show you a user question. So what we're going to talk about now is this idea of loopback policy processing. What loopback policy processing does is that it basically teaches our computer to eat user-side settings. So when we talk about this call center, classroom, shop floor, or even terminal services slash Citrix-style environments, this is the perfect win for this idea of using loopback policy processing. So here is a question I got from a GPAnswers.com reader. Who here is a member of GPAnswers.com? Look around. These are the sexiest people. You can be sexy too, and there's a link at the end of the talk, and I'll show you how to get on board with that. But let me go ahead and read this over to you in case you can't see in the back, and I'll read it for the folks who are also kind of listening in. I've got one question that maybe you can answer for me. I've got a group of computers, in this case, police squad cars, okay, computers that I don't want any of the user-based group policy objects to apply to. So let's analyze that part so far. So he's got a bunch of cops, and the cops in the cop shop are supposed to get some group policy objects, but we're in the squad car, we want something different, okay? So when user A logs onto a computer inside the police department, they get their drive mappings and printers and stuff. When they log onto the squad car, I don't want them to get those GPOs. I have the squad car computers in a different OU2. Awesome. We are lined up and loaded for bear. I've tried to find an answer to this online, but I've yet to find one. I have failed. Chip Gerke, Village of Pleasant Prairie, network admin. I have no idea if Chip is here, but he gave me permission to use this. You are? Yes! Let's give Chip a round of applause. He's a man. Excellent. Chip, I told you this would make its way somewhere, sometime. And here we are. Excellent. Chip, this is your moment, my man. Here we go. So, excellent. So let's go ahead and go over here. And let's kind of envision Chip and Chip's problem here. What we're going to do, we'll create a new OU first for our computers. Let's go ahead and get AD going here. We'll create a new OU here, new OU called squad cars. Okay? And what I also want to do is I want to take my one computer that I was working on and move them into squad cars. Chip already did this in his world. So I'm going to right-click over this. I'm going to find that computer, and I'm going to find that computer right here. And let's see. He's called Win7 Computer 32. By the way, who here has ever wondered how to figure out what OU he's in right now? If I gave you just that tip right now, would that be enough for you right now? Check this out. This is one of those you wish you knew this 10 years ago problems. Here we go. You go to View, Choose Columns, and then you go to Published At, and it shows up right there. Ooh, ah. Don't you wish you knew that 10 years ago? Oh, yeah, you could sort. I just did. So there's Win7 Computer 32. I'm going to right-click. I'm going to move him. You can see he's currently in that whatever, but I'm just going to right-click, move that guy over to squad cars. Awesome. All right, super duper. So now let me go ahead and refresh this guy. We'll go over squad cars. And, you know, let's go back to our sales, e-sales dudes, e-sales users. And you know what? I'm going to delete the link here on e-sales users. I'm now going to link it over to, what did I call this one? Replace shell with IE. And now it's linked over to my squad cars, as we can see right here. But I still have a problem. Let's think about it. This group policy object has nothing but user stuff in it. And now this OU has nothing but computers in it. The computers can't eat the user side stuff. So I got to retrain the computers to do that. And I'm going to do that with this technique called loopback policy processing. So if you've never had a chance to play with it, or you think you've got it right, let's revisit it to make sure we've really got this down pat. A computer can either be working in one of two modes, regular mode or loopback mode. What a common misconception is that group policy a particular setting or a particular GPO or a particular whatever is running in loopback mode. It doesn't work that way. The computer itself is either normal or loopback mode. So in this case, by segmenting the squad cars like this, I can teach all the squad cars to work in this unique fashion, which is to teach them to eat the user side stuff. So I'm perfectly lined up here. So let me right click over, create a new GPO here, and call this loop back replace mode. If we go back to Chip's email, Chip said, hey, Moskowitz, one of the things I want to do is I want to make sure that when the cops log onto the squad cars, that their outside stuff doesn't come inside the squad cars. So if when I right-click over this and I click edit here, what I'm looking to do is teach the computers under computer side, policies, admin templates, system, group policy. It's called user group policy loopback processing mode. And this guy has two modes. One is called replace and one is called merge. So let me talk through them after I have rebooted my dude over here, because he needs to be rebooted first. All right, so while he's rebooting, let's talk about this. So what replace says, replace immediately solves Chip's problem. Replace says, whenever I have stuff in the outside world, and then I log on to one of these 52 squad cars that I have, I want to make sure that my outside stuff is replaced with the computer pretending to be a user. So the computer himself acts as a person wherever he is. Now the computer right now is in the squad cars OU, and he looks up and he downloads all the GPOs as if he were a user, replacing or not loading the user stuff. So if Officer Smith logs onto the squad car, it's all of his stuff is replaced with the squad car pretending to be a person. And all that stuff comes down where the computer account lives. That's replace mode. Let's see if it all works. Now remember, what we want to do is we want everybody in the squad car, whoever logs onto the squad car machine, to get the exact same experience. Let's see if that actually is accomplished here. So we'll go back over to this guy over here, and we'll log on as eSales user 3. We've already seen him. Let's go ahead and see what happens if we do that. Excellent. That it almost could be a trick, right? So let's prove that I'm not pulling a fast one on you. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to log on to somebody here under West Sales. Okay, under West Sales. He's never logged on before, so there's no way I could have done this trick. So if I were to hit Control Delete again, switch user as West Sales User 3. Oops. Boom. Whoever's in the squad car gets their normal stuff replaced with this experience every time. Chip, do you feel like I have answered your question to your satisfaction? Yes or no? Thank you very much, Chip. Give him a round of applause. All right, super duper. Thank you, Chip, for being the man. I appreciate that. Excellent. Let me kill all this stuff, and I have some other homework to do real fast here. I know you can't see what I'm doing. That's okay. All right. Excellent. All right. That ends loopback processing mode. Okay, next thing on the docket to continue down the road of can we get, yes, oh, that's, and feel, you know, I forgot to mention, I love questions. So if you, hold on. So if you have questions, just right in the middle, you can just raise your hand. I'll call on you. I might put a pause on you, but I will get to you. Go ahead, my friend. Oh, thanks. So what the heck is merge mode? Merge mode says, let the user log on normally and get all their normal stuff. But then the computer user is going to log on and sit right on his lap. And if there's a difference between the user who logged on first and the computer user who logs on second, and there's a conflict, the computer fake user wins. Okay? It's a more complex scenario, but the idea is that that guy gets everything he's supposed to get, and then he can get more with the merge mode, okay? All right, hardware lockout. There's actually a handful of ways to do this. I'm gonna just show you one, which is the policy-based way. There is a preference-based way to do something similar as well, But we're going to use the group policy-based way to do this thing. Anybody here ever been told to make sure we shouldn't enable USB sticks on a handful of machines, or wacky phones with USB-like things that you can, you know, that kind of thing? And that's what I'm going to show you. But instead of actually showing you USB sticks, which gets kind of hard with my kind of setup up here, we're going to pretend, and I'm going to make an edict that says no CD-ROM drives. I know it's a little weird, but that's what we're going to do. So that's the idea. And I'm going to show you how to do this using policy. Again, there is a preference style way to do this as well, but I'm going to use policy to do this. And I'm going to go over to this guy right here. And on this machine here, this machine has two CD-ROMs. So what I want to do first and foremost is let's create the policy, the edict for everyone. I'm going to create a new GPO and link it here, and I will call this restrict evil hardware. All right, right-click over restrict evil hardware and click edit. And I want to dive down under computer side, policies, admin templates, system. There's a couple of them here that I think are really interesting. But the ones that I'm after are under device installation and device installation restrictions. Okay, so the first thing is there is in fact a policy setting. I can't remember quite off the top of my head where it is, but there's one that will particularly just prevent writes to USBs, prevent writing to USBs. That's kind of interesting. So allow read but prevent write. I'm sorry I don't have it here, but I'll. Actually, I have an article coming out in Microsoft, the Springboard newsletter. It'll be in that one. So anyway, what I want to do here, I want to prevent installation of devices that match any of these device IDs. What the heck is a device ID? Well, this is yet another one of these things you've seen before, and it didn't register in the back of your brain. And we're going to bring it to the front of your brain right now. So on this machine, I'm going to go to the device manager. I'll go ahead and look at my CD-ROMs here. I've got two of them right here. I'll go ahead and pick details, and I'll pick hardware IDs. You've seen this before, right? Where a particular hardware ID is referenced multiple times. Why are there more than one way to describe a device? Well, there's the most generic way to describe a device. And then there's like a super specific way to describe a device. Like if you took a USB stick, a USB stick could start off with a generic USB device. And then it's a USB stick. And then it's a 30 gig USB stick. And then it's a 30 gig USB stick by brand X. So there's generic to most specific. So what I'm about to do here is I'm going to take, for instance, the most specific one and copy that hardware ID, go back to the policy, prevent installation of devices that match any of these device IDs. I'm going to click enable here, click show, double click in there, and paste. That's a good thing I can paste that in because it's that 8, 9, or 10 underscores. Good thing, I don't have to find out. So now there's also a little secret switch right here. Also apply to devices that are already installed. This is cool. So what if the guy already has the thing you don't want him to have? I have this pretend vision of you click on this thing and the CD-ROM shoots out of the machine, but no. So you click on this guy, we'll click OK down here, it's enabled. And you know, while we're here, why don't we display a custom message and a custom title? So like the custom title, and again, we would never, ever do bad things like you're fired. That would be bad. That's bad. We don't want to do that. That's terrible. And then display a custom message. And the custom message is, you blew it up. Go directly to HR. That's not good, right? Bad. Definitely bad. So what we're trying to do, and I want you to watch a couple things at the same time here. I want you to watch the two CD-ROMs, and also in the bottom right-hand corner, and I can't zoom while this is all going at the same time, so just go ahead and watch. I'll wait for group policy to kick into high gear here after running GP update. If it all goes perfectly, bottom right-hand corner, boom. Okay, now I can zoom. You would never do this. Not even to other administrators. Anywho. So notice what happened, right? One CD-ROM correctly went away, and the other CD-ROM stuck around. And the reason for this was I picked the most specific version of the hardware ID. Had I gone more generic, I would have actually been able to accomplish a wider berth and gotten those other guys. All right? Any questions on hardware control? All right. Wasn't sure if you were stretching or you were really happy about that one. All right, so, oh, one more thing about this guy is let's go ahead, because this is policy, if I were to right-click and unrestrict evil hardware here, let's see what happens if I were to run GP update again here, GP update, if all goes perfectly well. If all goes perfectly well, it should actually restore the CD-ROM. I've seen it where it doesn't, but hopefully it will. And there we go, we're back. Excellent. So that's pretty cool. So you might have a machine that's a squad car today. Well, that doesn't make any sense. You might have a machine that lives in a training lab, and then you move it to sales or marketing, and it has a new life because of that. Very cool indeed. All right, any questions about that stuff? Yes, my friend. Yeah, so the question is, what's happening under the hood? And the answer is, it actually prevents the driver from being installed and rips the driver out from underneath it, thus preventing anybody from getting to it. Now, if you're an admin, can you work around this? There are settings that in that same general area that I was exploring that will permit an admin to work around these settings if that's something you want to do. Okay, good stuff. Yes, yeah, oh, yes, my friend. Yeah, the question is, can this particular policy setting be utilized for non-domain join machines? Do I have your question correct? Yes, this particular policy setting is in fact available for non-domain join machines. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, let's switch gears back again to this guy over here. All right, that was all that stuff. Okay. This is one of those tools that if you know about it, you don't know how deep it goes, or if you've never heard about it, you're like, where's this tool been my whole life? This is kind of a new one in as much as like it's newer. It's gone through 2.5 generations so far. The latest, greatest tool version is called the Security Compliance Manager version 2.5, and it's kind of a big tool. It's got a lot to offer. But really, here's the thing. If you're anything like me, Microsoft ships some new piece of software, and then somebody is excited about it, and you want to install it, and you want to make sure you get the bells and whistles all configured right the first time. Gosh, if only there was a prescriptive guidance available for you to get all this stuff correct. And then in that prescriptive guidance, gosh, if only there was pre-configured settings that they would give you that were vetted out by incredibly smart people at Microsoft that would actually even support these settings in your environment. That would be short of a miracle. And that is what the Security Compliance Manager does. Okay? It actually gives you a whole lot of cool stuff all in one place. The first thing is that it's going to give you pre-configured group policy baselines based upon the Windows security guides. Who has ever downloaded the Windows security guides? They are very large O. And they give you like 9 bajillion possible things that they suggest you do. Like turn off autoplay. That's a good idea. When somebody sticks in a USB stick or puts in a CD-ROM, you don't want that to kick off. I agree. So that is part of that security guidance, but there's 8 billion other things that they suggest that you do. Well, the thing is that those guidances are kind of constantly updated. There's some bug out in the field or some bad app, and it has to go back into engineering, and they have updated guidance. And now what? Well, now the doc has to be updated, and then you have to find the doc, and then you have to find the group policy object settings that are different. You have to manipulate it yourself, and now it starts to become like work. And that's no fun. So what we're going to do is we're going to use the Security Compliance Manager tool to kind of give us a one-stop shop for all sorts of stuff. Did I say anything bad? okay, for all sorts of stuff. The first thing is that we're going to have all those guides, all those doc guidances, all in one place in case we need to reference them. And the second thing is that we're going to go automatically to Microsoft to get the latest, greatest prescriptive guidance as if it were a dream. Now, the last part of this is that we'll be able to output what we get from them as group policy objects. That's what I'm going to show you. Heck, Excel files. So you and your team want to work together to figure out just on paper what sounds good or what doesn't sound good. You could do it with Excel. You could do it with DCM using SCCM or SCAPS, which works with other tools as well. So the point of the story is, here is how it basically works. So once it's installed, you're going to import the baselines from Microsoft. So what are these baselines? Again, Microsoft ships some new product, Internet Explorer 13, that doesn't exist. I'm making that product up. But when it comes out someday, right, the idea is that somebody will put together some guidance for it, and you will be able to download the guidance for that product. Does that make sense? All right. And here's, I guess these are out of order, but whatever. The idea is that you download the Microsoft baselines automatically. You pick new baselines you want to. The idea is that you then run the resulting file, and it expands all those baselines into things you care about. If you only care about three of them, pick three of them. If you care about 12 of them, you pick all 12. That's the general idea. Okay, and what else? I think that's about it. Okay, so I'm going to show you that during the demo. These are here for your reference. Let's go ahead and go over to that. So, the idea here, I've got this guy ready to rock. All right, here's the utility. I already have it installed. It does require SQL, but it can run on the littlest SQL possible. So if you want to run it on one machine and you want to be on the airplane and you do your best thinking on the airplane, that's totally great. You can have these, have all this stuff with you as a portable to-go package, basically. And let's explore what happens once you've got it. Like, gosh, I'm really raring to deploy Windows 7 Service Pack 1. And you take a look, and you take a look at their security compliance guidance on the computer side. And they're suggesting 261 little configurations. Okay, that's cool. Tell me why. In other words, they're suggesting something. Is there a good reason behind it? Does that reason work for me? Or is that reason maybe not perfect for my environment? You with me on the question you should be asking? The good news is, they give you the answer on whether or not it works for you or not. So here's what they do. Let me see if I can find one that kind of makes sense here that I like. Here we go. Just trying to find one that I like. Here, do not allow drive redirection. I don't even know what the heck that is. So what the first? If I don't even know what that is. Maybe nobody knows what that is. Do not allow drive redirection. So I'm going to click on the help text. Aha, the help text. So this is the same help text that you get as part of the what's in the box with the group policy editor. But they've made a configuration change. They've specifically said that they think this should be enabled for you. Okay, I didn't know what it was 10 seconds ago, and now they're recommending that I enable it. Why should I believe them? Well, they have an answer. And by the way, when I say they, I'm talking about the security compliance guidance folks who made the doc in the first place. So you click on the settings details here, and here is where it gets very interesting very fast. So for instance, they describe the vulnerability. In other words, what is the point of this thing trying to solve in the first place? Boom. Vulnerability, it explains in black and white. And it doesn't matter what this thing is or what it does. That's not the point. The point is that for every setting that they have, they're giving you the potential problem they're trying to solve. That is pretty awesome. Okay? So they explain to you what's going on. If you do it, well, what's the impact? The impact if you don't do it, then the countermeasure is, well, when you set it to enabled, you're protected over that vulnerability. Aha! Excellent. Okay? So, but you know what? It turns out I do a little research and I find out that, gosh, we love all 261 of these settings, but this one setting, we can't keep it enabled for my world. What are we going to do? It's obvious. I can't click on not configured. So what am I going to do? Well, the idea is that the ones that Microsoft provides, you can't change. But you can copy them, and you can change the copies. Okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to click on Duplicate Baseline over here, and we'll call this Fabricam Win7.1 here. And now that we've made our own copy, oh, I don't know where I'll find the setting. You just go with me. It doesn't matter what setting it is anymore. And I will pick it, and I will set it to, oh, that's a security setting. That's not the kind that I want. Find this guy here. Nope, still not what I want. There we go. Well, whatever. You get the general idea. I've made my settings change inside the particular security setting or group policy setting that I want, and I'm ready to go. So the next thing I could do, like I said, I could do some exports to Excel, and we could talk about it and figure out which things are right for us and which isn't. Let's assume that we've got it right. What's the next step? So the next step is going to be to make it a group policy object, and that is exactly what this tool can do. So you go through all the things that the Microsoft team suggested. By the way, I forgot to point this part out. Under Attachments and Guides, under the Microsoft section, I suppose, these are the guides that are important to you. For instance, remember, I couldn't find my last version of the guide. Well, here it is right here. I just have it. I can double-click on it, look up that setting if it's in here, which it probably should be, and there we go. It's just the entire doc right at my fingertips. So it's a nice one-stop shop for the guidance and the possibilities. Yes, my friend. Your question is, can I use this tool to suck in an existing group policy object, make some changes, and then spit it back out? Is that your question, sir? Yep. Yes, you can. Starting on the current, most current version, which is 2.5, the answer is yes. Okay? All right, so let's go ahead and do that. Let me go ahead and click on my copy. I will go to backup, group policy. Oops, that's import. That's what he wants to do. That's not what I want to do. I want to export. So I'm going to go to desktop and create one called backups and click OK. And shabam, I have a group policy object backup. Now, this is a whole different talk for a whole different day, but you can't just restore an existing group policy object that they create because your domain is different than their domain and it gets a little complex. Not to worry, there's a thing for that, which is we'll call this GPO123, just to give it a name here. And what we're going to do is we're going to right-click and import the settings. So you can't backup and restore this. It turns out you import and export it. So we'll click on Next here. We'll pick the actual backup that we just created. And there it is, the our baseline, Fabricam baseline for Win7 SP1 computer security. Click on Next, 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 Next. And shabam, if all went perfectly well, when we click on the settings report here, we've got a lot of settings, so we've got to wait a little while. It's coming. Anybody know any good jokes? There we go. So we'll go ahead and show all here. And there we go. Those are all the settings. If you still weren't happy and you still wanted to live edit this particular group policy object and tweak it, you could do that. It's all there, all available for you. So this is one of those utilities that's like, wow, I thought I heard about it. I didn't know how it worked. I didn't realize there was guidance. Hopefully, you now have some more touch with this utility. Any other questions, especially over here? I feel like I haven't gotten enough from you guys over here. Any questions over here? Going once, going twice? Cool stuff, yes? Excellent. All right, super duper. Well, let's go back to this guy here. Oh, remember this guy? Our workstation? Where we had that user do that thing he shouldn't have done, which was install that evil software? Now, what I said that I was going to do, and you saw me do it, was just reboot the machine. I swear I haven't touched it since. And what we want to do for these kinds of shop floor, kiosk, cafe, maybe your daughter's machine, is to make it so that whenever they do stuff on it, you could maybe save to the USB sticks or save to maybe a second hard drive partition. But whenever you reboot the machine, hey, all that nonsense is all back to normal. Wouldn't that be cool? Let me try that again. So if you reboot the machine, would you like it so that all the nonsense that all of your weird users did on that machine will melt away?
Yes.
That was a lot better. So the tools you're going to use for this, by the way, there was some older technology, and I bring it up here for historical purposes. Has anybody ever used Windows Steady State? Windows Steady State, okay, great. And Windows Steady State doesn't exist anymore. I loved Windows Steady State, and it worked up and through Vista, and then they stopped making it for Windows 7, and I cried for a while. And then finally, there was some documentation that you can use here if you want to, creating a Windows Steady State using Microsoft technologies, which is basically you love this feature in Windows Steady State, here's how to do it with the stuff in the box for Windows 7. Somebody asked me about that over here. So that's the answer to your question. What are the group policy settings for creating a steady state? These are in the slide deck. You can click on here, it'll go right to the download, and you can use this guidance if you want to. And then finally, the steady state reference spreadsheet. Gosh, they had a bunch of their own settings too that were really cool. Can I use those? Yes, there's absolutely no penalty for using those. But that tool doesn't exist anymore. It was retired as of 2011. And like I said, I cried for a while, and then I had to get over it. And thankfully, I didn't have to get over it for very long, because there are both commercial utilities you can buy that will do things like this, and also totally free utilities that will do this as well. So I'm friends with the guys at Deep Freeze. They make a great product. If you're a school district, you probably have some of this already. They do a great job with that. But if you're don't want to spend any money, here's another way to do it, which is there are two utilities that are similar in what they accomplish. One is called Steadier State. Get the name? Get it? It's a joke? Get it? Yeah? That's by Mark Manassi. So Mark Manassi put his hat on, and he figured out, what am I going to do to make this work? And he created a utility called Steadier State, and you can download it from steadierstate.com. There's a similar utility called Wioski, which is kind of a fun name, which is kind of like pig Danish for kiosk. And I know that because I asked the guy that made it. And his name is Sami Laiho, and he's Finnish. He's a Finnish MVP, and he's just smart as heck. Now, both of these utilities kind of work pretty much the same way, but they do have a catch. The catch is both of them require either Enterprise or Ultimate. So if you've got a bunch of Windows 7 professional machines, sorry, this isn't going to work. Now, the reason why it doesn't work on these types of machines is that the way that this works, and I don't know if this translates, and you guys are kind of a younger crowd, but when I was younger and I went to Grandma's place, Grandma had this like fun little toy for me when I was there. It was like a little slate, and I would draw on the slate, and then I would like pick up a piece of wax paper and it would go zip, you know what I'm talking about? And then you draw some more on it, and zip. Well, that's exactly how these utilities work. Here's what I'm talking about. It takes advantage of the Enterprise and Ultimate boot from VHD feature. So you create your perfect machine using their tool, we'll talk about that in a second, and then you draw a line in the sand. And then everything from this point forward, when you reboot, you zip, and you go back to the original way. And then you create some more, and you put crap on it again, and then you reboot, and zip, it's all back to normal again. Pretty sweet. So this is the idea behind booting from VHD and also differencing disks. That's what's going on here. So you saw me reboot the machine. I promise I didn't do any fancy pants, hanky-panky stuff. Let me show you exactly what it looks like now. We're back again. I click on kiosk. You already saw that part. That's not a mystery. But look, no more of that nonsense that I had already installed. I just rebooted the machine, and it's a clean machine again. So the way that Wioski works is that you download Wioski. It's got an install routine. You take a WIM file. It can be your own WIM if you have your own custom WIM that you want to use for creation of your Windows 7 machine, and out pops a physical machine that you can use to do this sort of snapshotting style stuff. So you can see this machine has a guy called Kiosk on it, but I also have a guy called Maintenance. And the idea behind Maintenance is that there are these two special icons. Again, I'm using WeOSCE. Steadier State is equally powerful and just as great. I just happen to be using this one. And the idea is that, let's say you needed to do some work on this machine, and you've drawn the line in the sand. Well, you can reboot and open up the computer for updates. And what he said was, he says, remember UAC. What he really means to say is, don't forget to right-click and run as admin, because this command requires to be run with admin rights. So if I were to right-click and run as admin, what you see is like a burst of activity, and boom, it reboots. And then it'll be open for reconfiguration. Then I can manipulate anything I want to, and then use the other icon to re-lock it back down. Totally free utility. Yes, my friend. Domain membership. So I think what your question is, hey, Moskowitz, every 30 days, won't there be a problem because the computer will ask for an update of the security channel? And the answer is, yes, it would be. So in that particular case, what you'd have to do on that machine, you might want to create a local group policy setting to prevent that. That's the advice. Yep, you're right. There's some other struggles there, of course, too. How does it get patches? How does it get this other stuff? Yeah, and of course, the commercial versions of these kinds of tools, they do a great job with this stuff. But if you're on the cheap, hey, yeah, you can't get everything. So, cool. Great question. Yes, my friend. How does it handle user profile data? I think what your question is, just help me out if I'm wrong, is there a way to ensure that my user experience is maintained from session to session? Is that more your question? Yep. So what you're going to want to do in those cases, well, first of all, this is mostly for, you know, the walk-up types. So in that case, you kind of don't care. In the other case, you're going to try to redirect as much as you can. If you use folder redirection for the things you can folder redirect, well, that stuff is always pointing over there. So that way you can say, look, be sure to save your stuff in my doc so we know secretly it's stored over there. When we nuke the machine with the zip, we know that the docs are still stored in the right place. Okay? Cool. All right. Okay, next up on the docket. Okay. All right, this is one of those questions that I just get like all the time. Oops, I lost my little PowerPoint thing. There it is. This is one of those questions I just get all the time, and I'd love to show you how it works and how to work around it, which is, you know, hey, Moskowitz, how come application X ships with an ADM or ADMX file? What do I do with it? And what can I do about applications that don't ship with ADM or ADMX? Does anybody have those kinds of questions generally? Yeah. So what we're going to do is let's explore some of the easy case when an application does ship with an ADM or ADMX, which is like, for instance, Office 2010. It ships with ADMX files, but what about all your other applications? We'll go ahead and see what that all looks like real fast. So let's go back over to this guy here. So, for instance, here on this computer here, I happen to have already downloaded Office 2003 and Office 2010's ADM / ADMX files. So I've already got them as downloaded here. Whoops, that's the wrong thing. I want them unpacked already. So this is Office 2010 ADM and ADMX. I got to be honest, I'm not sure why they shipped ADM files. I'm not exactly clear about that. So I don't think you need them. You're going to leverage the ADMX files. Now, it's a different talk for a different day, but the idea behind ADM versus ADMX is that you don't get new features. There's no new stuff you can do on the client machine. But what is true about ADM versus ADMX is that your ADMXs can be put in what's called the central store, and therefore everybody can utilize the same set of configurable items. So if I click on the ADMX guys here, just to prove a point, if I were to create a new GPO here called Office Fix Up, right click and click Edit, I won't see those options here. They just don't exist. So what I want to do next is I want to take the ADMX files and their language files and put them in the right place. Now, the right place happens to be under, put the right place over there and the source over there. Happens to be a folder called policy definitions that lives in the sysvol folder that you have to create yourself. And I've already done this, but just to prove a point, I'm going to take all my ADMX files, copy them over here, and all my language files, en-us, copy those guys over here. Anybody who's ever taken my 5-day intensive training workshop class, we go into this in ludicrous detail. We don't have time for that. But I'm just trying to prove a point here. The very next time I click edit on that particular group policy object, or any group policy object for that matter, something special happens, which is now every single group policy object I create from this point forward will now have the ability to manipulate the items that you want to manipulate in the various applications, like Excel, whatever you want to do here. All right, so that is basically in a nutshell what you do. If your application ships with ADM files, you can use those. You can import those directly into the group policy object. If you have ADMX files, you can leverage them in the central store. But there's still a big mystery. And the big mystery is, what about every other application? Like, for instance, let's take a look at, for instance, I took this guy for fun here. Whoops. Whoops, that's the wrong guy. That guy. Anybody ever download an ADM file off the internet and hope that it worked? Yeah. Sometimes it did and sometimes it didn't. But what does it do and what doesn't it do? Well, the common conception or misconception is that it will deploy a setting and lock it down. Doesn't really do that. Let's see that together. So let me go and create a group policy object for my West sales users here. And I will call this Acrobat Fix Up. Now, I'll right click, I'll click edit here. So I showed you ADMX 10 seconds ago. Now I'm going to what's called, the technical term is called consuming an ADM file. So you click on policies, click on admin templates, and you can right-click and add or remove templates, like you might have downloaded this off the internet, for instance, and I've got it right here, and click close. And it becomes an item right there under classic ADM files. And I trimmed this one down so we didn't have a billion settings. And for instance, you want to set the page units, like millimeters, inches, picas, or points. And where this lives, by the way, inside the app is, let me go ahead and log on as, say, West Sales User 3. Whoops. Log on here is that guy. I'm going to log on to another computer with the same credentials at the same time. The point is, when you have an ADM file from the internet, and you feel like, oh, I now have the magic key to configure that application. Turns out, it might work the way you expect, but more often than not, it's not working the way you expect, and you don't even know it. Okay? So, on this first machine here, here's Acrobat Reader X. I'll go ahead and double-click on Acrobat Reader for the first time, and I got to, of course, accept the EULA agreement. That's always fun. Click Edit Preferences, I go to Units here. It's set to the default, which is fine, that's great. Let me go over to my other machine here. What do I got here? Well, this other machine, he's differently configured. First of all, he's got actually using AppV. Anybody using Microsoft AppV? Yeah? So AppV is running down here, and you go to Edit Preferences here. We'll just make sure I'm not pulling a fast one on you. There it is, inches. That's the default configuration. Or, the Microsoft partner Citrix, you might be using the Citrix streaming application or the Citrix presentation version of that as well, is also on there. I've got three different versions of this on here. And you can see it's getting it from the Citrix machine. And just to prove a point here, we'll let it run. All right, edit preferences, go to units, there we go. So we're all set to the, just everybody's running the default. So you think, okay, that'll be cool. Let me go ahead and let me change this over to millimeters, because we have some corporate standard. And of course, I'm using a simple one for us to hang our hat on. There's a lot of security settings and important stuff that you might really want to do. This is just a simple one to hang our hat on here. Click on millimeters here. And let's go over to this first computer. We'll run GP update over here. We'll head over to the second computer. I'll run GP update over there. All right, so we're just making sure we get the latest, greatest setting. We got the policy. So what's our expectation? Well, our expectation is that it will deliver the setting and lock it down. So let's see, did it do that? Oh, it set the setting. Did it lock it down? No. So it did actually perform the work. Let's see what happens if I log off or log back on or run GP update. What do we think is going to happen? It's going to fix that right back up, right? Nope. Because what happens in policy land is once the policy is delivered, if the group policy object's version number hasn't changed, it will not redeploy the setting. So if we take a look and we go back to Acrobat Reader and go to Edit Preferences, it didn't fix it back up. So you might have deployed the setting, all of your users got it, and then they started working around and you don't even know it. Okay, if we go back to our app V machine, over here, just to prove a point, if we go over there, rerun app V, turns out, I wrote a whole article on this, app V can't pick up stuff that isn't in what's called the proper policies keys, and sorry, these guys aren't. So now we have a real challenge. So with that in mind, what I'm gonna show you last is my utility called Policy Pack. So Policy Pack Professional and Policy Pack Community Edition. So everything I'm gonna show you has a free component and also there's a commercial component. The idea is that it's an add-on to your existing group policy infrastructure, which just conquers this particular problem. So let's take a look. If we were to, let's go ahead and uncheck that. Let's right-click and create a new GPO called Really Fix Up Acro. You probably noticed that there's a node here called Policy Pack. And if you know group policy, you already know how to use it. So you just right-click, New, Application, and we ship with 35 pre-configured packs for applications you already have. So in this example, I've been working with Acrobat Reader, but if you want to control Flash and Java and some of the Microsoft stuff and Firefox, if you want to get that stuff out there, it's super simple. So for the purposes of this, if we go to Acrobat Reader here, take a look. It looks just like the actual application itself. Maybe you want to uncheck some important security thing, because if that's checked on, that's really dangerous. We can go the extra mile and disable the configuration in the target app so the user actually can't work around it. Same thing if we go to units. We can go and make this into, say, PICAs. We're going to guarantee PICAs and right-click and disable the corresponding control in the target application. So in other words, the actual application itself, user can't work around it. So if we go back to our target machine here, run GP update on this guy, and also run it on this guy over here, we're getting the latest policy settings. Again, it just rides the same light as the group policy you already know and love. And again, everything I'm showing you right now is absolutely free. So if I click on Acrobat Reader X on this guy, go to Edit Preferences, check it out. Whoop. Here, I need you. Yep, you, come here. Yep, come on. Come on up. Yeah. Do me a favor, try to move the PICAs back to the normal setting. Just go ahead and try to, yeah. Whoops. Yeah, now you've done it.
I did it.
What did you click?
I clicked too many times.
There you go. Yep, so you can't do it there, right?
Nope.
Let's do it one more time. Let's just make sure I'm not pulling a fast one on you here. So we'll go ahead, we'll do it on the this guy. That's the app V version. So we'll go to Edit Preferences on this guy here. And okay, your turn again. There you go, right?
Yeah.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. All right. All right. So with that in mind, did you guys feel like you learned a little, a medium, or a lot? Let me hear it real fast.
A lot.
Thank you guys very much. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Before I forget, here's how to get cool stuff and free stuff. I just don't want to forget. Again, I'm doing that book signing tomorrow, booth 2241. It's a free giveaway. Just show up and you get a book. I do want to remind people about my group policy health check services. So if you feel like, gosh, I can't figure out how to get to the bottom of what's going on in my world, I can help you. I also do live, in-person, and online group policy university training. And again, Policy Pack is a free and also a commercial component. Everything I showed you is totally free. So with that in mind, what are you going to do? You're going to go here, tinyurl.com/JMTE5. That is the right place. I'll leave it up there. I'm happy to take more questions. Just come on up. Thank you guys very much. Have a great tech ed. Take care. Thank you.